Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course, YouTube. You could always give us a call, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. You can get at me on Instagram, where I'm always straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Got Stuart Kovacs and Michael Samter across the other way, and we got a lot cooking all the way up until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Coming up 20 minutes from now, this guy has done a phenomenal job to start the NFL season. Nico Collins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, who have been a pleasant surprise this year. And then coming up at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific, we'll chat it up with the former Georgia quarterback and now college football analyst in Aaron Murray. Let's get right to it, though, with the reaction from the final game of Week 4 in the National Football League. When we take a glance at the Seattle Seahawks and the New York Football Giants, what an ass-kicking that was last night. Seattle thoroughly dominated the New York Giants, and you saw the difference between those two teams where last year the Seahawks surprised a lot of people. Last year the Giants surprised a lot of people, and going into this year, you thought there was going to be regression with the Giants. I didn't know if they were going to fall flat on their face or if they were just going to slowly fall back from the pack. Clearly, the former is that, where they are going to fall flat on their face. They're 1-3, and they're heading to 1-5 with trips coming up, going to Buffalo and also the Miami Dolphins the next 2 weeks. And you look at Seattle, week one was ugly. There is no doubt about it. They got just destroyed in that game up against the LA Rams. But ever since then, this has been sort of what you saw last year from the Seattle Seahawks. And the biggest difference is now that Seattle's secondary is really coming into their own with the draft picks that they've made the last 2 years. And just more and more praise is deserved to Pete Carroll and also John Schneider, the general manager. But we have to start with the Giants, because the big takeaway from the game last night is Daniel Jones is paid to be a franchise quarterback. And I know it wasn't an ideal situation last night, but you're at home. I know you don't have Andrew Thomas. I know you don't have Saquon Barkley, but you have to play better. And that line was atrocious. There were times throughout the game where you look at Daniel Jones and you go, wow, the way he runs, he kind of looks a little bit like Lamar Jackson. But then as the game does go on, you just see more and more of the same old with Daniel Jones, which when you get paid that money, you can't be putting the ball on the turf. You can't be about to get in the end zone and then just throw an ill-advised pass and get picked off when you had Darren Waller wide open and that go for a touchdown for a little house call for 6 points. Daniel Jones has been in this league too long to be making these same mistakes, and it keeps on happening over and over and over again, minus the blip of last year, which is an anomaly, where last year Daniel Jones did a good job with not a lot around him. But Daniel Jones just continues to show you more than not that he's not going to be worth that money. And it's impossible when you watch the game last night to not walk away and you feel bad about Daniel Jones, the state of the Giants, who last year, right, they were heading in the right direction. You have Brian Daboll. You have Joe Shane. Year one, they overachieved, but now they're coming back down to earth. And they made the risk this offseason, and they kind of had no choice, but they had to pay Daniel Jones. And now you are seeing someone who's paid like he's a franchise quarterback, but when you watch him throughout this year, the team is not looking like they have a franchise quarterback. And it makes me think, when you look at the landscape of the NFL, because the quarterback money is absolutely ridiculous now. There are so many guys that get paid these enormous contracts. And a lot of times, you're paying off potential. And potential means you haven't done it yet. You know, there are some circumstances where like a Mahomes or a Josh Allen, where you feel really good about the quarterback and you know that you have the guy and you have the right guy. But then there's other situations like Kyler Murray, where Kyler Murray had some good moments, some bad moments. I don't know if he's an elite quarterback, and Kyler Murray got the big-time contract, and I know he got hurt last year, but now he has a new coach. The GM that drafted him is out, and there's a ton of speculation, depending on where the Cardinals fall in the draft, if this is going to be the final season for Kyler Murray. And we've seen this before in the league, whether it was Carson Wentz, who got paid, ended up not being a franchise quarterback, where just because you're cashing the check, just because you get a lot of the dinero, doesn't mean that you're actually a great quarterback. And there's different levels of it. There's guys that are bad. There's guys that are average. There's guys that are very, very good. And then there's elite, great franchise quarterbacks. And when I watch Daniel Jones, more times than not, I walk away, even after being very impressed with him, with no one last year, where I just say, this guy just doesn't have it consistently, where he is going to be a great quarterback and a franchise quarterback to lead the Giants into the future. And you go around the rest of the league, and I started to wonder this last night, and I was pondering while the game was going on, how many franchise quarterbacks do we actually have in the NFL that are playing right now? Like, take Aaron Rodgers out of the conversation because Ayahuasca Aaron is currently hurt. But when you look at the guys that are actively playing in the NFL, in whatever order you want, we know the four best quarterbacks in the league are Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen, and also Joe Burrow. I know Burrow's off to a slow start. I know the Bengals, their offense has been anemic through the first four games of the season and very lethargic, but Joe Burrow's been to a Super Bowl. Joe Burrow has been to an AFC Championship game, and it's tough to just simply gloss over the fact that right now he's not 100%. But right out of the gate, when we're trying to evaluate how many franchise quarterbacks there are in the NFL, there's no doubt about it. Mahomes, Hurts, Allen, and Burrow are all four guys that got paid, and you have the actual belief and you know that those are guys that are your franchise, they elevate your franchise, and they are the four best quarterbacks in the NFL. Outside of that, though, and this may be controversial, I think there's only two other guys that are slam dunk franchise quarterbacks right now. Lamar Jackson is a franchise quarterback. The biggest question with him, though, is can he stay healthy? But we've seen Lamar Jackson win a unanimous NFL MVP. Lamar is a franchise quarterback who also hasn't been put in the best position to succeed. Because that's a big thing when you have a young quarterback. Can you develop the quarterback the right way? Can you surround him with the proper offensive line? Can you surround him with the right run game and the right receivers in the passing game? And up until this year, the Baltimore Ravens have done a bad job surrounding Lamar Jackson outside of Mark Andrews, the tight end, with these elite wide receivers or tight ends. And Odell Beckham has been banged up. Zay Flowers is a rookie. Rashad Bateman, unfortunately, his first 2 years, hasn't been able to stay healthy. And look what Lamar has been able to do with the Ravens consistently getting into the playoffs. And in Lamar's first true season as a starter, he did win a unanimous MVP. So I catapult Lamar into the franchise quarterback conversation. And the other name to wrap it up to make it six is Justin Herbert. And I know some people are going to say, Zach, but what has he won? What has he won? And he hasn't been in the league that long. And Justin Herbert's stats have been phenomenal. And I know he has a good situation in terms of Keenan Allen. I know Mike Williams is out for the year. You have Austin Eckler as well. But I can't say that Justin Herbert has received the best coaching. Brandon Staley is a bad football coach. And he's lucky the last 2 weeks to get two wins with the idiotic decisions to go for it. Fourth and one on his own 24 when he's up by four. And then fourth and one at his own 34 when he's up by seven. But Justin Herbert has all the makings of a franchise quarterback. And he's eerily similar to Phillip Rivers, where you know he's going to go to a bunch of Pro Bowls. You know he's going to have these gaudy stats and these prodigious stats, but can Justin Herbert find a way to win the big game and be clutch, which unfortunately for Phillip Rivers, he wasn't. But outside of those six quarterbacks, Mahomes, Hurts, Allen, Burrow, Herbert, and Lamar, out of the guys that are currently playing right now, I can't say that the rest of the quarterbacks in the NFL are slam dunk franchise quarterbacks. So let me be clear with two guys. Trevor Lawrence is on his way. Trevor Lawrence in year one had a disastrous situation with Urban Meyer being his head football coach. But last year, he got him to the second round of the playoffs when he actually had competent coaching in Doug Peterson. I don't like, though, what I'm seeing early on from the Jaguars this year, where they could have sent a big statement going up against the Kansas City Chiefs, and they couldn't even get into the end zone. It was all three Brandon McManus field goals in that game. I ultimately believe that Lawrence will be a franchise quarterback and he'll be the quarterback that he was hyped up to be, but I'm not ready after one really good year to say, okay, he's automatically in a lock of a franchise quarterback situation. The other quarterback that's on his way is Tua Tagovailoa. And Tua has to stay healthy, but you see what Tua can do when he does stay healthy. I know it didn't go his way up in Buffalo and Orchard Park against the Buffalo Bills, but Tua Tagovailoa has made some throws this year that are absolutely right on point and are like the definition of surgical. But then after that, when you just throw some names out there, you know, I would say Matthew Stafford is a franchise quarterback, but I'm looking more so at the future. I don't know how much longer Matthew Stafford's going to play, because the entire Rams organization, it feels as if they have 1 foot in, 1 foot out in terms of how much longer they want to be with the Rams, with their coach, with Aaron Donald, and also Matthew Stafford as well. I think Stafford is a really good quarterback, clearly a quarterback that could win a Super Bowl. We saw him do it 2 years ago and make clutch throw after clutch throw in the fourth quarter in those playoff games. But I just don't know how much more of a window Matthew Stafford has a franchise quarterback caliber play. The other guys, and I can hear the cockroach Cowboy fans now, why isn't Dak Prescott a franchise quarterback? Because when Dak Prescott has the ball in the final 2 minutes of a big game, I just don't believe in him. I think Dak is the definition of a very, very good quarterback, but not a great quarterback. And the last 2 years, those were winnable games up against an elite team in the 49ers, who did not have elite quarterback play in Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy, and Dak couldn't get the snap off 2 years ago, and last year with this defense playing championship ball, he couldn't find a way to get the ball in the end zone, and he put the ball on the turf, and he threw the ball to the other team. So Dak is one of those guys that's just really good, but wouldn't be someone, in my definition of a franchise quarterback, where I would say, okay, Dak is an automatic lock for a franchise quarterback in the NFL. Kirk Cousins, very similar. Good quarterback. I like Dak more than Kirk Cousins. You know Kirk Cousins is always going to have big-time stats, but push come to shove week in and week out, when you get later into the season, you just don't trust Kirk Cousins. Jared Goff, another similar guy that has been to a Super Bowl. He has been solid. There's inconsistencies with Jared Goff. Sometimes he looks like he could be the guy, and then other times you're like, okay, I've seen enough. I think Goff is more of a good quarterback rather than a great quarterback being a franchise QB in this league. And the other two guys that I'll bring up here, that if you would have asked me this 3 years ago, and if I didn't put these guys on my list, you'd be like, Zach, what are you smoking? You know, what are your eyes watching each and every Sunday? But I got to see more out of Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson right now is playing himself out of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And for Deshaun Watson, I just don't see the old Deshaun Watson that we saw in Houston, where I look at him week in and week out and said, wow, that's a top seven quarterback in the NFL. And that's just not my sentiment. I talked to Pro Football Hall of Famer Kurt Warner 2 weeks ago, and he said he's really concerned with Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson, and they're just not seeing the field well. So I can't call either of them a franchise QB right now. And then other guys, it's still too early. Like Brock Purdy, I think it's more of a product of the system, even though that's not a knock on Brock Purdy. But I don't know how great Brock Purdy is, but he is in an ideal situation, and he's taking advantage of his situation. And even though I like what I'm seeing so far from C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson, we'll see what happens with Jordan Love and Bryce Young. A few games really into their careers as the starting quarterbacks, it's way too early to tell. So right now in the NFL, how many lock franchise quarterbacks are there? Clearly, Daniel Jones is not one of them, and we saw that last night. But I think there's only six that are actively playing, and that's Mahomes, that's Hurts, that's Josh Allen, that's Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and then also Lamar Jackson. Who is a lock of a franchise quarterback in the NFL? How many are there? Right now, I'm only saying it's six. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We'll take a break here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, Great story this year in the NFL.
All right, welcome back in. It
is the Zach Gill Show on CBS Sports Radio. How about the Houston Texans? They're 2-2
to start off
the season after back-to-back monster victories up against the Jaguars and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Nico Collins, who I remember talking to right before the NFL draft, has really done an unbelievable job here in your number three in the NFL. Has 22 receptions for 428 yards and 3 touchdowns on the year. And he's coming off a great performance in that 30-6 victory up against the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he had 7 catches for 168 yards and 2 touchdowns. And the Texans wide receiver, Nico Collins, kind enough to join us right now. Yep. Nico, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
I'm good, Zach. How you doing? I appreciate having you, man.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and you're off to this incredible start. That Steelers defense is really good, but you guys put up a lot of points on them. Why were you guys able to have such a good performance up against that stout Steelers defense?
Man, we knew just coming to the game, what type of team the Steelers were going to be, man. But I feel like it came down to just preparation, throughout the week, just fixing the details from the previous week, our previous game we had, man. And I feel like it just came down to just going out there and just having fun, man, just competing and enjoying the moment, man. And we came out with the big victory, man, for the city, and it was big time.
Your quarterback has impressed a lot of people in C.J. Stroud. How do you describe playing with him as QB1 the last 4 games?
Yeah, man, C.J., he's a dog, man. We already knew, when we picked him, man, what type of guy we was getting, man. A dude's a dog, and you could just tell just the way he just carried himself, every single day, man. It's the reason why he's a captain, and it's only going to get better, every single day, man. He just carried himself with a chip on his shoulder, man, and willing to work and willing to improve everybody around him.
What do you think the ceiling of him could be? Because when he plays his way through the first 4 games, it catches a lot of eyeballs, and people go, man, this guy's really looking good.
Yeah, man, the ceiling's high for him, man. I feel like there's no ceiling for him, man. Like, it's scary how good he can be, man. You could tell just being around him every day, just, like, he's willing to improve on his game, like, so much. And it shows on Sundays, man. Just he puts in the extra work with us, man, after practice, just little reps, we didn't get or didn't make in practice, we'll stay after to get those reps in, man. And when game time come on Sundays, man, he's just balling. He's not even thinking about it, man. Just going out and just doing what he loves, man. Sure.
Nico Collins here with us. You always know a quarterback has their guy. You look like you're the guy for C.J. Stroud. Take me a little bit behind the scenes why you guys have been able to blend so well together, and it seems like it's been – really a seamless transition for both of you guys, and you really hit it off.
Yeah, man, I feel like, man, it came down to when, when we first picked him up, when he first drafted CJ, man, and when the first day he just stepped in the building, man, you could tell he had that it factor with him, that he's willing to change his whole program, man, and we've just been grinding this entire OTAs, man, just me, the receivers, the tight ends, man, just making sure we're getting that chemistry down pat, man. And we've been working hard in OTAs, camp, and a little bit during the little time break we had, man, just so we can get that bond together, man, so we can go out and just ball out, on Sundays without even thinking.
I'll tell you, though, when we get into Thanksgiving weekend, things get a little heated in that locker room with the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a fun one. Nico Collins here with us from the Houston Texans, off to a great start. Through the first 4 games, for you individually, you've already surpassed your stats in an individual season from the prior 2 years. Just what has, for you, this been like, where we've seen so much success for you and you get in a lot of national praise and national attention?
Yeah, man. I just feel like, man, first, I'm blessed, just to be in this position and to have success on the field as well, man. But I feel like for me, man, I'm just continuing to chase my small details. I feel like I need to improve on, man, and just, continue to work on my craft, just continue to critique myself by small things, because I feel like there's always room for improvement in your game no matter what, So I feel like I'm just trying to attack details, every single day, and just having fun, man, playing football. I've been playing this sport your whole life, so I feel like it's just, it's just football at the end of the day, man, just having fun with it, So I just feel like, man, I'm just thanking God every day for everything, man, and just taking advantage of every opportunity I have.
When Nico Collins is at his best, What does that look like? What type of wide receiver are you?
Man, I feel like I could be unstoppable, man. I feel like I could be one of the best, man. But it come down to, you know, I feel like just being healthy and being available for the team, man, and just taking care of your body on and off the field, man, and just being, you know, the right guy, having the right mindset, man, and just gotta have that dog mentality. You know, it's every time you step on the field, man, you gotta have that killer mindset, man, and just go out and just ball out, man. And I feel like my main thing is gotta continue to stay healthy, continue to trust the process, and just keep building, keep growing.
I'm gonna put you on the spot here, Nico Collins. Yeah. Who are your top five receivers in the NFL? Just wondering.
Oh, my top five. I'd say Mike Evans, Julio Jones, Larry Fitzgerald. Who else? Calvin Johnson, for sure.
And you got to have Jerry Rice in there, right?
You got to have Jerry Rice in there and Randy Moss. I don't know. It's kind of it's hard. No, I got Randy Moss probably in my top two.
Well, when we look at the current day wide receiver, just wondering, like, who are the guys that you look around the league, and I don't want to say you model your game after, but that you really respect?
Respect? Oh, man, I respect a lot of receivers, man. Well, most definitely Mike Evans, because I just feel like I've been watching him since 2014, and then when he was at Texas A&M, I feel like that's one dude I kind of got the same body type, same game almost, man. So I feel like that's one dude I still watch to this day, still study him, watch him how he get open, use his hands. DeAndre Hopkins, man, just those type guys, man, that have like great success, has been successful in the league. You know, those guys I just still look up to. You know, still watch, study film on. Just trying to monitor my game after them, just make plays. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like them still dudes I still watch to this day.
Wrapping up with Nico Collins, who's having a breakout season for the Houston Texans. Take me inside that locker room and give me a little feel of what type of coach DeMeco Ryans is.
Man, DeMeco, man, I feel like he's a player's coach, man. He's a guy that's been there, you know, that's sat in our seats before, you know, that's been through the things we're going through currently. So I feel like that's a person that can relate, man. And he's a coach you'll leave it all out there for, man. You can tell his passion. You know, he's willing to make sure you go out there and succeed, man, and just have fun at the end of the day. You know, he wants you grinding, you know, throughout the week. So Sunday, man, is easy. You're not even thinking about it. You know, you're chasing the small details, you know, throughout the week, man. That's one thing he just harp on, man, and just finish. You know, just having a dog mentality about you just every day, just when you're 720 lines, man. And I feel like then the team, we picking up that and we feeding off of the energy from each other, man, and just going out there and just having fun, you know. And I feel like that's the main thing. You know, he's just preaching with us, man, just having fun and being there, having each other back, you know, for sure.
In the NFL, it could change really quickly. You guys are 2-2. A lot of people are now paying attention to the Texans. Do you feel like this could be a playoff team this season, Nico?
Yeah, most definitely. But I feel like, man, it's, you know, nothing's guaranteed in the league, man. I feel like it's going to come down to being consistent every single week, man, and chasing those details. You know, I feel like you can't get comfortable in the lead, man, because anything can happen, you know. So I just feel like for us, man, we just chasing details every single week and just going out every single Sunday, man, just not knowing what come out would be, you know, not knowing would that be your last game or not. You never know, you know. So I just feel like we're going out there with that edge and just going out to compete, you know, and just fool people why, you know, that we can compete, you know, with the best too as well, you know. So I feel like, man, the sky's limit for this entire team. And, man, I'm just excited, you know, to see what the future holds.
Last thing I'll ask you, this Sunday you guys go up against the Atlanta Falcons. When you take a look at them and you see them on film, what are the things that stand out to you about their defense so far?
Man, yeah, their defense, man, they're solid defense, man, solid secondary, man. Out of corners, safeties, linebackers, you know, it's playmakers all over the field, man, offense as well, man. You know, it's, like I said, I feel like you can't go into another week, you know, thinking things don't go smooth, because you just never know. You know, I feel like you got to prepare every week, man. You know, Atlanta is coming back from London, you know, off a loss from the Jazz, man. But, so, you know, they coming in with a mindset, you know, trying to win this week. So I just feel like for us, man, we got to continue to trust our details and continue to grind out, man, and just have fun, you know, this week.
Well, it's been fun to see the start that you're off to, also the team as well. Always appreciate you when you join us, and good luck the rest of the way.
I appreciate you so much, man. Thank you so much, Zach.
There you go. Nico Collins with us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. And that's been such a fun story to start this NFL season, because the Texans, they were in a situation where they had no clue what to do with the whole Deshaun Watson situation. When were you going to be allowed to move on from him? When would he be attractive to another team so you could get a bunch of draft picks back? And they've capitalized on those draft picks, and they were in a waiting period where you had two coaches that everyone knew were not the long-term answers, with David Culley and Lovie Smith. And then this offseason, they really start to say, okay, now we're going to advance the organization forward, with Caserio finally calling his shot, getting D'Amico Ryans, having him come back to the Texans and be the head coach, and then making the two big moves with C.J. Stroud and then also Will Anderson Jr. And this has been a team the last 2 weeks. Those are two just phenomenal victories. Taking the Jaguars to work, beating them by 20 points, 37-17, and then taking care of business against the Steelers this past week, just destroying them 30-6. And look at Nico Collins, 22 receptions for 428 yards and 3 touchdowns. All righty, we'll take a break here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, we'll do a little hot seat ranking. Who are the 5 coaches that seats are the warmest right now in the NFL through the first 4 weeks of the season? But first, standing by with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, here he is, the Ackman, Rich Acker.
Ah, the satisfying sounds of more sales in your business. And from the sound of it, your business is growing. But you shouldn't have to pay more to scale your business. With Stamps.com, you can import orders from wherever you sell online, find the lowest rates with the fastest delivery times, and instantly deliver tracking updates to your customers and stock up on supplies. Get started at Stamps.com today with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale.
The Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. This week's player is Chargers linebacker Khalil Mack. In Sunday's 24-17 win over the Raiders, where he haunted Stu Kovacs, Mack sacked Aiden O'Connell 6 times in the game, had 2 forced fumbles, and racked up 10 total tackles. Since the Raiders traded him to Chicago in 2018, Mack has 10 sacks in 5 games against his former team. And I did see this video, and I think fan behavior at football games is just starting to get out of control. And I know you could say, oh, well, it's always been out of control, and probably a big factor into it now is we just get to see a lot more than what we did years ago, with how prevalent social media is, and everyone kind of becomes a Twitter tough guy. And then when you get into a real situation with alcohol flowing and things like that during the course of the game, people just become really stupid. And maybe the way that they act on social media then starts to translate into the way that they're going to act in person. But I've always said this, and I love going to games, but when you have an obnoxious crowd or you have obnoxious fans, it just ruins the experience. And I'm almost surprised, where not the fighting, because that stuff, it's just disgusting and it shouldn't happen. And you get into all these dopey debates, like when the whole Deebo Samuel thing happened. I did an interview on the game, one of our Odyssey stations in the Bay Area, and they're like, oh, well, those Eagles fans are animals. And I go, guys, you have just as many fights in San Francisco. And we've seen that throughout the year. So it becomes these old notions and these old, like, kind of thoughts where, oh, this just this fan base is a bunch of savages, and that's where you expect to get beat up. If you go to a game and you try to fight someone, you're really a loser. Like, there's no other way around this. You're an idiot. Like, ultimately, you got to wake up the next day and be accountable for your actions. And I've been to other buildings before wearing an opponent's jersey, and you get people drunk as a skunk, like, run up to you and get in your face, and they're like, oh, you suck, you mother bleeper, blah, 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 blah. Like, it's just ridiculous. And it's over a football game. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm passionate about my teams. I want to see my teams win. But I could never understand why another individual would try to harm somebody else at a game. So with what I'm about to say, it isn't at the level of the way that I just built it up, but I did see a bunch of Raiders fans saw Mark Davis over the weekend as Mark Davis, I don't know if he was like on the outside of a luxury box, but he's on like an elevated kind of perch where he's seating, and those fans are just harassing Mark Davis. And I get it, right? When you're the owner of that team and you have all that money, sometimes you just got to take it and you got to ignore it. But imagine being a fan of a team and go and seeing the owner of that team and just yelling at him about the coach and Josh McDaniels. Like, I get it if you want to say one time, fire McDaniels, the dude's a bum, the guy's not a great football coach, sure. But just to continue it over and over and over again, like, who acts that way? And I know we have fun on this show. I know that, you know, we'll go on rants that sometimes you go, wow, Gel's really getting worked up about this person or this topic. But to do it like in person, when it's the owner of the team, like I do appreciate if you want to ask like a difficult question or if you want to bring something up and voice your opinion, but there's a proper way to do it. And these dopey Raiders fans, and I get why they're upset. Josh McDaniels isn't a good coach. We all know that. He had idiotic decisions this past weekend, like when the other dopey coach, Brandon Staley, gives you a situation, and on first and goal, you go, oh, we're not going to run the football with Josh McDaniels. We're going to throw it, or with Josh Jacobs, we're going to throw the ball here with Aiden O'Connell. I get why you're upset. But Mark Davis, then, is having these fans yell at him over and over and over again, and he tells the fans to smarten up. Now, I saw that video this weekend, and then today I saw some article, and the headline was, the owner of the Raiders tells their fans to smarten up when fans are calling for the coach to get fired. And when that article, right, hits today on Tuesday, I thought that Mark Davis was dumb enough to, like, hold a press conference today and say, oh, all the fans that are going after Josh McDaniels, it's uncalled for, and Josh McDaniels is a good football coach, and you guys need to smarten up. And at first, I was ready to be livid. I was ready to have an outburst. I was ready to be kind of like those fans that I was just talking about and call Mark Davis every name in the book. But then Samter shows me the audio of it and plays me the audio of it before the show. And I go, they're basically quoting him from the interaction that he had with fans when fans were acting like a bunch of savages yelling at him and demanding for him to fire Josh McDaniels. And he says, smarten up. Like, I don't know if that smarten up was necessarily, oh, Josh McDaniels is a great coach. It was the way that the fans were behaving and interacting. And there's a lot of times, right, in our job, and I get it, it's a public job, I'm going to have people that jump into my Facebook messages or slide into my Instagram DMs, and they say a bunch of ridiculous things. But you can't really let that affect you. But it's one thing for it to happen online. But then to see the owner of your team and operate that way, usually you don't see that in person, and it was caught on video. But I thought the way that it was portrayed today on Tuesday when I saw these articles, I thought for sure that this was Mark Davis doing an impromptu media call to defend his coach in Josh McDaniels. And I'm like, even Mark Davis can't be that stupid with the way that he runs the team and be that tone deaf. So, Stu, let me just ask you this, because you're a big Raiders fan, and I know you don't like Josh McDaniels, and I don't blame you because the guy is a bad football coach. If you saw Mark Davis at a football game, is sweet Stuart Kovacs yelling at Mark Davis, hey, you bum Mark Davis with that haircut, you gotta fire McDaniels? Or are you just trying to have a conversation and nicely say, Mark, I love you, I love the Raiders, but this coach is just not the guy? How would you approach it if Mark Davis was sitting right next to you right now and you wanted your opinion to be heard?
It's definitely the latter. I wouldn't, like, torture the guy or, you know, go at him. I might not even bring up McDaniels. You know, it's one of those things where, like, I've rooted for the team my whole life. It kind of be cool to meet the owner, even if, you know, some of the decisions I think he makes sometimes are a little out there in terms of, like, hires and constantly firing people. I think he gets that from his dad, obviously. But, but yeah, I wouldn't go at him. To be honest with you,
I would ask him if a PowerPoint presentation is maybe coming, and then we could have the status of Josh McDaniels be solidified and sealed and delivered, and he'd be donezo as the head football coach. Samter, You're pretty close with Mark Davis, if memory serves me right. I remember when we went to Vegas as a CBS Sports Radio Network for the draft, I saw Samter hanging with Mark Davis in the lobby. So when is Mark Davis joining us so we could yell at him about the state of his football
team? I'm not saying that we're best friends, but I'm also not saying that we're not best friends, right, Rick? We really hit
wink,
it
wink,
off.
Nudge, nudge.
Yeah. He gave me his barber, and it's really worked wonders for me. But like,
you guys have a similar haircut?
Yeah. What surprised me also was that, like, you know, where Mark Davis was sitting in the suite, he was front row right in the aisle where the fans walk. Like, that takes some chutzpah to, like, sit right
chutzpah.
There. Some chutzpah.
Some cojones. Or as Ross Tucker would call them, cajones.
Yeah, the cajones, because the J is a hard J. It's a very hard J. But, like, I was surprised that he was sitting right there, like, right in the firing line of the fans. And, listen, the headline was definitely misleading, but, like, there's no question that Josh McDaniels is making some really terrible decisions and really dumb moves. And, like, it really feels to me that, like, between what happened with the Colts and what happened with the Broncos and now here with the Raiders, there's just something about Josh McDaniels just not being a leader and not being the guy who could be the head coach of a team.
Well, I think you see it with a lot of Belichick assistants. They try to be Bill Belichick, where it's my way or the highway. And that's one thing when Bill Belichick does it, because he could show up to an event with all the rings on his fingers and everyone knows what he's accomplished in this league. Josh McDaniels on his own has been a disaster. And I think you need to learn how to adapt, and you could take some things from Belichick, but you can't try to recreate Bill Belichick. And I think we've seen that with guys like Charlie Weiss and Eric Mangini. And you go through all the names. Like, Bill O'Brien had success where his team was in the playoffs a bunch, but then he wanted all the power, couldn't work with the general manager, then got the power, ran DeAndre Hopkins out of town, and the whole situation was a mess because it's weird. You would think coaches have people skills, but a lot of these coaches have bad people skills. And being the 1985 drill sergeant coach, when you're dealing with grown men that have a lot of money and more money than you in the year of 2023, just doesn't work. And for McDaniels, I always try to use common sense. Like, he has clearly put Josh Jacobs in the doghouse. That's why Josh Jacobs didn't get the ball first and goal at the 3. You know, you look at other decisions as well. I don't know what Hunter Renfro did, but clearly McDaniels, who you would think with how many receivers, similarly to Hunter Renfro that he produced in New England, you would think that they would hit it off, but that hasn't been the case. And I think McDaniels is very moody, and once you get in his doghouse, you really have to scratch and claw to get out of it. And a lot of players just probably say it isn't worth it. So when you get rid of Carr, I was fine with that. But when you get rid of Derek Carr and you go to Jimmy Garoppolo, who I can't even say is definitely better than Derek Carr, it's going to make a lot of people question you in the organization when you already weren't popular. So with that being said, after the whole spiel about fan behavior and all that stuff with the Raiders that's going on right now, let's get to some hot seat rankings. I think these are the 5 coaches in the NFL right now whose seats are the warmest and will go from... I don't want to say that any seats are cool, but the seats that are a little bit cooler and at 5 to the seats that are hottest in at 1. In at number 5, it's Kevin Stefanski. I know the Browns haven't been horrible, but they've been inconsistent. The AFC isn't as strong as what we thought it was going to be, but I've seen this story too many times, even with losing Nick Chubb. You have a quarterback that's under a lot of pressure and is under fire with the money that he's paid, and deservedly so. If we don't start to see Deshaun Watson get back to close of a resemblance of a great quarterback, everyone's going to point the finger at Deshaun Watson and be like, well, what the heck's going on with Deshaun Watson? The thing is, though, they're not going to move on from Deshaun Watson because of all the picks that they gave up for him and the guaranteed contract. So when Deshaun starts to feel that heat, he is then going to throw the coach under the bus behind the scenes, and they will get rid of the coach before the quarterback. If the Browns don't make the playoffs this year, I think Kevin Stefanski is gone. In at number 4, it's Dennis Allen. I don't think Dennis Allen is a good coach. Talking about the Raiders, we've seen him coach before. But with the Saints team, it's really tough for Dennis Allen to win this year. And I don't believe that they're going to win this division. But if you don't win this division, I don't get how you could justify bringing Dennis Allen back. And through the first few weeks of the season, I do believe Tampa Bay is better than the Saints. And I also believe the Atlanta Falcons are better than the New Orleans Saints. In at number three, I thought about bumping this guy up a little bit higher, but I'm not going to do so because I just don't believe that Mark Davis is going to fire him with how much money they had to pay in the aftermath of the John Gruden situation. McDaniel's seat should be warm. I just don't know with David Ziegler being his BFF, running the team as well, and how close he is with Mark Davis, and also Tom Brady coming in to be the minority owner of the team eventually, and McDaniels is a Brady guy, if they're going to get rid of Josh McDaniels this year. Like, it could look really ugly for the Raiders this year, and it will continue to look really ugly. I still don't know if they're going to pull the trigger, though, on Josh McDaniels and get rid of him. In at number two, it's Brandon Staley, is the luckiest coach in the NFL with the two idiotic decisions he made the last 2 weeks, going for it on fourth and one when he's backed up on, inside his own 35-yard line. If the Chargers don't elevate themselves from just being a playoff team this year, which who knows if they're going to make the playoffs and then maybe win in a playoff game or two, they should get rid of him because they have too much talent to be going through these seesaw ride games and these roller coaster emotion ride of games each and every week. And I keep on thinking they're winning in spite of the coach. And we saw that the last 2 weeks where the coach basically gifted Kirk Cousins and Aiden O'Connell touchdowns, and both those quarterbacks ended up making mistakes and throwing interceptions. And in at number one, it is Matt Eberflus. The Bears are going nowhere besides getting the first and maybe second pick in the NFL draft. And with how ugly it's been with the relationship with Justin Fields, and I know that they're probably going to move on from Justin Fields at the end of the year, you're basically in the reset phase if you're getting the first and second pick, and I would not hitch my wagon to Matt Eberflus. So those are my five coaches that I think are in danger of losing their jobs right now and how we rank the hot seat 1 through 5. We'll come on back. We'll get into some comments from Jerry Jones that you don't want to miss. And also, who are the top five teams in the NFC? Jump on board, 855-212-4CBS. It is the Zach Gelb Show.